Do not attempt to change the channel.
All media are extensions of some human faculty.
Is books part of the media?
Media, we don't need it, do we?
Baby, this thing is bigger than all of us.
The media. A lot of you out there probably never even heard of the word.
Media is any form of communication. It can be radio, television, computers.
Welcome to the internet, my friend. How can I help you?
You know, we live in the most mediated society in world history. You spend 10 to 12 hours a day with media. And so I think it makes sense to think about, in a sort of systematic and sustained way, our relationship with media.
Hello, hello and welcome to Be the Media in this near 2011. It's a beautiful day out there. It's warm, it's balmy, downright stunning. You are listening to Be the Media. This is, of course, CHLY 101.7 FM in Nanaimo. On this show, we talk about all things media, from the local to the global, including perspectives of consumers and producers of media. All the contributors of this show, Be the Media, are faculty, students, and friends of the Media Studies Department and the Media Research Lab at Vancouver Island University. I'm Marion Vanderzon. My co-host here is Neil Scobie. And we have a fascinating show lined up today. Today, we are focusing on a timely issue. I've been looking forward to this show for a number of weeks now. Right now, Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, of course, has an application for a frequency swap with the Pattison Group. And the application has been filed with the CRTC. So the CRTC is the Canadian Radio, Television and Telecommunications Commission. And they basically oversee content in radio and they're the regulatory body for that. So the application has been filed with the CRTC and it's open to public comments until January 13th. So that's next week, folks. So as we get into the show, about three quarters of the way through the show, certainly I'll give you the link also to that, the place on CRTC where you yourselves can make comments as a public citizen. And that is what it's for. It's for people to get involved. So we are going to explore this issue and we have a number of people with us and we're going to do this live on air. So we're going to start the show by talking with Lila Chinia. She's the program coordinator at Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM. And I'll just give you a little bit of background, maybe starting with Vancouver Co-op Radio. So Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM, was one of the first community radio stations to be licensed in Canada. They first broadcast in 1975. And Co-op Radio's station is located in the downtown east side of Vancouver, and it airs over 90 different programs, and that is being done by over 350 volunteers. Lila Chinia, she became a volunteer for the station on the Red Eye program, that's their news program, on 1998. It's also a very good news program. She later joined the station's programming committee, helped with the station's fundraising efforts to move the station. They changed locations. That was in 2001, and then she sat on the board of directors. In 2002, she was hired as the station's program coordinator, and other than a year and a half hiatus to have a baby, she's been there ever since. So we're going to start with Lila. What Lila's going to do for us is she's going to give us the broader context. What is this? What is a frequency swap? Some of you listening may not know. So we'll really get into the nitty-gritty of it, and we'll find out what it is, what's happening, all the details around it. And then we're going to be joined by two other guests live in the studio. First, I'll introduce Ken. Ken Zakreski, he is the proprietor of Permanent Press Publishing, and that works in print and web-based products. He previously has published Peer, an independent news and entertainment magazine in Nanaimo, and prior to that was president of the Navigator Newspaper Society, and that's the newspaper that comes out of Vancouver Island University. And at the time, of course, that was Malaspina University College. Ken is also the CEO and developer for Gabriola Co-op Radio. And for those of you that don't know, Gabriola Island is, they're trying to get their own community station off the ground. So that is, of course, Gabriola Co-op Radio, and it's being proposed as CKGI, and it would be at 98.7 on the FM dial. He was also the station manager and developer for Radio Malaspina, this station, in fact. He was co-host also for the National Campus Community and Radio Conference this past summer, the NCRA, and that conference was held on Gabriola Island. So he is very knowledgeable about the subject of radio and has been working in it for over a decade. We're also going to be joined by Jesse Schroeder. Jesse Schroeder is a longtime media activist. He's also president of CHLY, the Radio Malaspina Society here, and he's a concerned citizen. So we'll be hearing some of his concerns about the issue. He's been also involved in media activism for a long time. So we have a good dynamic coming up here. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to start with Lila. Let's have a musical segue, and we'll come back on the air, and we'll have Lila Chinia, the program coordinator, tell us what this frequency swap is all about.
I was chilling in the shine of the light, not dial doing anything my radio advised. With every one of those late night stations playing songs, bringing tears to my eyes. I was seriously thinking about hiding the receiver when the switch broke, cause it's old. They're saying things that I can hardly believe. They really think we're getting out of control. Radio is a sound salvation. Radio is cleaning up the nation. They say you better listen to the rise of reason. As you were told, you better listen to the radio. I wanna bite the hand that feeds me. I wanna bite that hand so badly. I wanna make them wish they never seen me. Some of my friends sit around every evening and they worry about the times ahead. But everybody else is overwhelmed by indifference and the promise of an early bed. You either shut up or get cut out. They don't want to hear about it. It's only inches on the reel to reel. And the radio is in the hands of such a lot of fools trying to anesthetize the way that you feel. Radio is a sound salvation. Radio is cleaning up the nation. So you better listen to the voice of but they don't give you any choice, cause they think that it's treason. So you had better do as you were told. You better listen to the radio.
And welcome back to Be the Media. I'm here with Lila Chinia. Lila is the program coordinator of Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO. Welcome, Lila.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Lila. Lila, let's just jump in right from the beginning. What is a frequency swap? So what is happening at CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver? What is a frequency swap and what is it all about?
So right now the proposal, the application before the CRTC is we are currently at 102.7 FM in Vancouver. So that's the frequency that we currently use to transmit our signal. There's another station that's owned by the Pattison Broadcast Group, and it's called The Peak. It's out of Vancouver as well, and it's at 100.5 FM. So neither one of us own those frequencies. You can't actually own frequencies, but you are licensed to use these public airwaves. So we can get into more detail later, but basically what the swap is that the proposal is that Co-op Radio would go to 100.5 FM and The Peak would use 102.7 FM.
Okay. So why? Why is Co-op Radio interested in this swap?
Well, so there's a lot of background from our context and then from sort of the context of what's going on around frequencies generally. So for Co-op Radio's context, we have actually been at our transmitter. So the only place, first of all, for your listeners to know, in Vancouver, the only place that any radio stations other than the two campus stations broadcast from is from Mount Seymour in North Vancouver. So there's only one location that stations can broadcast from.
So, Lena, I'm just going to interrupt and break it down even further. So
Absolutely.
Just so our listeners know, you've got the station, and the station, of course, puts out a signal, and that then is going to be jumped to Mount Seymour, and that's where the tower is, the transmitter tower.
So every station, your station can be located anywhere, but you need a way to get your signal from your station to your transmitter, and those are two totally different things. So in our case, we need a line of sight to our transmitter because there's a little device on the top of our roof at the station called an STL that transmits, it's like a little mini transmitter, that transmits the signal that's being broadcast live, transmits that to the big transmitter, and that's using lots of electricity, pumping out the signal so that enough people, you know, the more electricity you pump out, the more you hope, as long as there's no big barriers in sight, the farther you can get your signal.
Right.
So that's basically the idea.
Okay. And so now we come back to the fact that you said that Mount Seymour is the place where these large transmitters are located.
Yeah. So Mount Seymour is the place where these transmitters are located. It's Crown land. So I'm actually going to give you the background on this so it makes sense when I drop some names later on. So it's Crown land, so nobody gets to own that land. It's public land. There are five groups that lease that land because they have interest in using that land for transmission purposes. So the CBC uses it, for transmission. Terrace and Gas has land there, and they use that as an emergency broadcast system, and they're required to have that as gas providers.
Okay.
Then there's three commercial entities that have to do with broadcasting, and I believe it's Chum, Rogers, and Chorus. So since 1982, Co-op Radio's transmitter has been located on Mount Seymour, and we've been on the Chorus land. It wasn't Chorus at the time. It wasn't bought out by Chorus at the time. It used to be CKNW. We had a really good relationship with CKNW, and they basically we're subleasing off of them, right? So all we need to do is we owned our transmitter, and our transmitter was already old when we got it. So our station's 35 years old, and the transmitter's older than 35 years old. But we had a good relationship with them, and they gave us some really reasonable rates. So for years and years and years, we were paying a very reasonable rate to lease the land upon which the transmitter that we actually owned would sit and could broadcast.
Which, so, of course, again, just for context, helps a lot when you're a community radio station, because generally the budgets of community radio stations are very low.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And our budget has really not gone up since 1982. So we're you know, in effect, it's gone down because of the living conditions. So, yeah, our budget has remained very, very minimal, pretty much just the basics. So that was a good arrangement and really good for us. And I think, to be quite honest, the CKNW, it was good for them, for their image and for their points with the CRTC to be doing good for a community station. Now, something changed in about 2006, and before that, our rates kind of increased a little bit, but it wasn't unreasonable. And in about 2006, we got a notice from Chorus, so it had become Chorus, but they had gotten bought out by Chorus by that time. And they had notified us that they were going to increase our rent, that we were going to be asked to pay, what the regular commercial rate was, which was $76,000 a year. So we had started off with a rental rate of $2,000 a year. We'd gone up to about $5,000 within 20 years, right?
Okay.
And that was reasonable. And then they wanted to increase it to $76,000. They said they'd give us a deal at $36,000, and obviously that was not going to work for our budget and would have easily put us under.
So again, just for the listeners who are hearing this for the first time, because Chorus bought out that license to lease the transmitter site, in 1 year they wanted to put you up from 5,000 to 76,000, but they were giving you a quote-unquote break, so they were putting it up from 5,000 to 36,000.
And just not to be misleading, Chorus had bought out CKNW a long time ago, so it had been Chorus for a while. It wasn't like overnight they became, you know, Chorus bought out that media company and then raised our rates. It took a while for them to get to it, but for whatever reason, in around 2006, they were noticing that they could make more money off of leasing transmitter rental space. So they decided to do that, and felt, I guess, that it was more worth their while to charge more money than it was to sort of have good relations with us and to be contributing to the community radio sector in some way. So so that began some negotiations with them, and we were able to sort of negotiate something somewhat reasonable for 3 years, which was at $7,500 a year. And yet, after 3 years, we were going to have to negotiate again, that they were still looking to increase our rates. So we really began a very serious look at that time at what we were going to do with our transmitter space, if there was any way we could move from Chorus, because it was very clear that they were not interested in maintaining a rate that was reasonable for us, that was sustainable for us. So we began that process, and we looked at different options and started learning all about, you know, who's leasing land up on Mount Seymour. It wasn't looking good. It was looking like it was going to take us about $50,000 to move, and there really wasn't space. The only reasonable space available would be at CBC, which had some nonprofit rates, but they didn't have tower space at the time. So we were kind of just stuck. So there we were, and we've also got this aging transmitter, which we've all known at our organization probably for the past 5 years. It's just been this niggling thing in the back. You know, yeah, we really got to start a fundraising campaign for the transmitter. But being, you know, a very bare-bones operation like we are, it's literally, you know, we're going from month to month, and it's very, very difficult in situations like that to be doing some advanced planning for something like our transmitter, especially when we're negotiating all sorts of things around the transmitter site as well. So we had all these challenges facing us, and it was around that time that we were approached by Pattison, who seemed interested in
the fact. So just to clarify, when would this have been? What year? Where are we?
Well, it was less than 2 years ago now, so whatever that would have been.
So we're looking 2009, somewhere in there?
Yeah, I'd say that's about right, exactly. So the situation with them, so the context for them is that basically, generally, it's really hard to get new frequencies, and I'm sure Ken will attest to that later on when he's talking about them getting frequencies for the Gabriola station. It's just really hard right now. There's only limited frequencies, and so once they're given away, you can't really, you know, do anything about that. They're more and more, I think, they're trying to shove frequencies in between spaces that they didn't used to have any, just to get a few more radio stations. But Pattison's been new into the media game, and they started this station called The Peak, and they were able to get a license at 100.5, but because they were later entering the game, 100.5 is not allocated to have as much power as we are at 102.7. So when their Industry Canada is allocating frequencies, they give an amount of power that you can broadcast at that frequency. And if you broadcast more than that power, you're going to create problems for the frequencies beside you and create interference. So you've got sort of an allocation there.
Okay.
So Co-op Radio has been allocated. I mean, we've had our license forever, since 1974, and we were allocated for 100 kilowatts. So that's 100,000 watts of power we could pump out. Now, we broadcast at, we have a transmitter that allows for 5,500 watts. So 5,500 watts, and I think we've actually been using something more like 3,000 something watts.
So only a very, very small part of what you could potentially use with 100,000 watts.
Exactly. So we've only been using a small portion of what that frequency was allocated for. Now, on the other hand, here was Pattison with this Peak, and they've got 100.5, and they would love to broadcast at a higher higher wattage. Because they want to be competitive with their commercial competitors, right?
Okay, because they want to be competitive. And what was their, what is their wattage? What is the 100.5?
I'm not sure, actually. I don't know 100.5, the maximum allocation on that. So I'd have to look that up. But it's definitely less than 100 kilowatts. So we had something that they wanted that we weren't using, and so they approached us because they wanted to have access to that thing that we have, which is that extra 100 kilowatts there. So they offered us a package, and what that entails is, in exchange for us moving to 100.5 and then moving to 102.7, they would provide us with a new transmitter, a new STL, so that device that I was talking about before that transmits your signal from your station to your transmitter. So a new STL, a new transmitter, a new backup transmitter, and a new backup STL, which to us is just like, we can't quite believe we'd ever have a backup transmitter. It's too much to think about. But this is quite incredible to have a backup transmitter. So two transmitters, two STLs. In addition to that, Pattison obviously has a large network of billboards, and so they were going to provide us with something around $30,000 in advertising to help promote the new frequency.
And so, just I want to interrupt, Leela. Was it $30,000 or $300,000?
You know what? I have to.
I was, of course, looking at the documents online, and I believe it was $300,000 for billboard
advertising. It might actually be $300,000, and my numbers are getting caught up in my cold here. Yes, I should double check on that. So that's their services that we would be able to use. And then we would get in cash, I think it's $120,000, every year for 5 years.
For 5 years.
So it's a five-year deal. And then in addition to that, we would have free transmitter rental space for 5 years.
Right, which is bringing us back to the issue that you had with Chorus, how the prices were going up.
Exactly. So that helps us for those 5 years.
Okay. And so what happens after the 5 years are up?
So after the 5 years are up, so the land that, so when I was mentioning the names of the folks who lease land on Mount Seymour, I didn't mention Pattison at all because they're not one of those groups. They have, they've found a partnership with Terrison, so they sublease their land from Terrison, just like we used to sublease from Chorus. So that's where the Peaks transmitter is currently located. So in 5 years, we will be on Terrison's land still, and we would need to negotiate with Terrison a rate, you know, a rental rate for that space.
So the sublease would no longer be coming through the Pattison group. It would be coming instead through Terrison.
Yep. Exactly.
So it wouldn't be a, so to speak, a sub-sublease. It would be a sublease.
Exactly.
Yeah. Just trying to clarify that for this next 5 years, it's with the Pattison group. And then after that 5 years expires, it switches to Terrison Gas.
Yeah, and to be honest, I'm not sure on paper whether it's directly with Terrison or not. What is true is that we are not paying the bill on that rental for 5 years.
For 5 years.
Yeah.
And then do you has there been any indication of what might happen at that point? Might the costs then jump up to this idea of market value, you know, go up to somewhere close in the $76,000 per year range?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think where we'll be in 5 years is where we are now, but with two brand new transmitters and a lot more money to have hopefully given us a possibility for more sustainability. So it's possible, you know, I guess anything is possible. It's possible that Terrison asked for the same rates as Chorus. The information we've been given is that that's very unlikely, that they're not in this game, that that's not what they're using that land for. So it's very likely, from what we've gathered from folks who work in the industry, that we'll be able to get quite a reasonable rate with Terrison. And again, you know, I think it's important to know that our history with getting a good rental rate up there has to do with the fact that corporations have wanted to help out a community station, and it's actually been in their best interest to do so. So we're hoping that that's the case with Terrison.
Okay. So that is the hope, and of course there also are no guarantees of that.
There's no guarantees, and so again, if it turns out that they charge us ridiculous rates, then we're in the same boat as we were, right now. And we can take a look again at, the CBC. It's possible that by that time there's going to be more tower space available because with the changes to TV broadcast technology. So it's possible that we'll be in a better place if we do need to move.
Right, right. So you mentioned that Co-op Radio had 100,000 watts, and you mentioned that it's a valuable place to be on the frequency because of that potential, and that it has potentially a large commercial value. Did Co-op Radio ever look at any other entities in terms of making a deal that might be even more beneficial than the one that you struck with the Pattison Group?
So we didn't shop this around. This wasn't something that we identified as saying, hey, we've got something and we're going to shop it around. It's not really, partly, it's not our frequency to sell. We're licensed to use it. So really what this is was another entity seeing that we had something they wanted. Now, once the negotiations began, we actually signed a non-disclosure agreement. So we were not able to be talking to many other people about this. Having said that, I think what was important around these negotiations was, listen, this is a very big deal. We are changing our frequency, which we've had for 35 years, and we need to know that is this, if this is what we get, because we had lots of meetings around these negotiations, and kept coming back to, are we getting enough for this? Are we worth more? Those questions came up a lot in those negotiations, and at a certain point, the question was, okay, if this is what we get, are we happy with this? And the answer is yes. We negotiated, we being the board that's elected by the membership of Co-op Radio and the staff of Co-op Radio. So both the governance and the administration of the station really thought very carefully about this. And in the end, we came to the decision that this offer, what we're getting, was very fair, that this is a fair deal, that in exchange for what we're moving to, for what we're going to, that this is a very, very good thing for the station. And it would be really, first, very silly for us to give up this opportunity, and that this is an amazing opportunity. This is the chance that we needed to kind of breathe life back into the station.
Right. When did the deal get signed, in essence? Like, you mentioned that you signed a non-disclosure agreement so that you weren't able to talk about it freely within the programmers of your station and also beyond.
Mm-hmm.
When was the deal finalized? When were you finally able to talk about it?
Well, it's only when it went to the CRTC, so when it was actually publicly announced by the CRTC, which was just in the middle of December. So it was a surprise to everybody when it would get released. We didn't know. And all of a sudden, there it was, public. So that became our chance to actually then let our members know and let people know about it. So and then begin this process, which is a very important part of the process. We couldn't talk about it before because of the non-disclosure agreement, but now is the time for us to discuss it and to inform people and to work out worries that people may have.
Yeah.
Because I think every single person on the board and staff went through probably what many of your listeners might be going through, and I know a lot of our programmers and members have, you need to work it out in your head. Like, it's not a natural ally for us to be doing business with the Pattison Broadcast Group.
Yeah,
you mentioned Pattison, and every single person in the room kind of, we weren't sure. Are we being taken advantage of in any way? And I think in the end, what this is a very, this is a business deal, We have something they want. They're giving us what we think is a fair price for what they want, and there you have it. And the thing that we're getting out of it, I think, just in reality for the station, is just really going to make a difference to us, like really going to allow us to put our resources into good programming and into moving forward and building our membership.
So let's touch on the idea of programming. Mm-hmm. So you've got this business deal with the Pattison Group, and how might this affect the programming at CFRO? I mean, when we think about, okay, so what happens if Red Eye, for example, or another news show wants to cover a story that, well, that portrays the Pattison Broadcasting Group in a negative way, or affiliated companies, because, of course, the Pattison Group owns a lot of other companies like Island Timberlands or et cetera. Mm-hmm. So are you concerned about the kind of coverage that then you can put out and that it might negatively affect your transmitter leasing costs as you go down the line in the future, that kind of thing?
Not at all. Not at all, because this deal is a one-time only thing. So we know this is the terms of it, and this is what we're getting. Doesn't matter what we put on the air in between. We still get the terms of this arrangement for 5 years. We're not negotiating with Pattison in 5 years. We're negotiating with Terrison for transmitter lease space. And, you know, and I mean, not to say that, okay, they might have equipment we can use, just like CKNW had equipment we can use and that kind of stuff, that we can't have good relations with them, but we're not concerned about breaking any ties there in terms of putting information on our airwaves. We're not competitors with them either. I mean, we're part of a completely different sector of the radio broadcasting landscape, right? So we're not competitors with them. That's not an issue. And they have absolutely no, there's nothing in this that affects our programming. And I think if it did, that would be a problem for everybody. The CRTC doesn't want this to change our programming because we're licensed as a community radio station. We need to stay that way, and we have a mandate as a community radio station to have independent programming, mm-hmm. Public affairs, spoken word, music, all of that. So if that were to change, I don't think, neither would our membership, our staff, our board, we wouldn't support that, nor would the CRTC. So that has nothing to do with this deal.
Okay. So let's jump back to the whole non-disclosure agreement. And when you mentioned, you clarified that it was the CRTC that made this all public, that Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRR, didn't have the ability to do that. It came out with the CRTC, and that was in mid-December, I guess?
That was in mid-December, yeah. I don't know the exact date. I think it's usually about a month before the interventions are due, so it's probably around December 13th.
Okay. Yeah. So you had your annual general meeting in early December.
We had it at the end of November. We have it every year at the end of November.
End of November. Okay, great. So, and then, of course, this became public after the annual general meeting.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of folks that have suggested that it would have been a lot more appropriate to present the deal at the annual general meeting so that it could be transparent, so it could be inclusive, so also that programmers could take part in the process. I spoke to a former program at CFRO, and he mentioned that was one of his primary concerns, that, you know, as a programmer, he was upset that the information wasn't shared with members in some way, that, and other outsiders have noted that concern as well. And what's your response to programmers, former programs, programmers, other citizens that say, well, hold on a second, you know, we just find out about this in mid-December, we weren't part of the process, and we may or may not like the deal, where is our space for knowledge, for input, for, you know, an open conversation?
Absolutely, and I think this is that time right now. So the non-disclosure agreement is actually pretty common practice, and especially for the commercial sector. So anytime they're going to be doing business, and you're doing business with them, you're going to have to sign a non-disclosure agreement. So that's just normal. But it has consequences. And so the consequence is, we would have loved to. Normally, and with this kind of change in our organization, we would have brought that to an AGM. But because of the non-disclosure agreement, we weren't able to do that in November to notify our membership. And that's something we had to weigh, you know, are the benefits of this deal, do they outweigh the potential to not let our membership know at this time? And I think we did weigh those. We weighed, you know, the advantages of this deal, the fact that, you know, we have a requirement to act in the best interest of the station. And for us, that, you know, improving our transmitter, which was failing, putting the station on solid ground with some financial input, improving the outreach of the station, those were all really important elements that are, you know, meeting the mandate of the station and meeting the board's mandate. And so that kind of outweighed the fact that, okay, we wouldn't be able to notify programmers at the AGM. However, we also kept in mind that they would have this opportunity, and that opportunity is now, which the public has, right? The opportunity to voice their concerns with the CRTC at this point when the call for interventions came out. So we did know that there would be an open call at some point. And at this point, I mean, again, we're just sort of, we didn't know when it would get, when the announcement would be released either, so we didn't know how we could organize stuff, but we've sort of managed to throw together a members' meeting, which we're going to have this Saturday at noon at the station. So anybody who may have links in Vancouver who's a member of the station is welcome to come to the station at noon this Saturday. And that's really kind of our opportunity to fill people in on the gaps, to tell the story of how this all came to be, to explain the context, and to answer any questions or concerns that members may have so that they can have some more information and still have time to file interventions either in support or opposition or just comments.
Right. So again, folks, this was mentioned at the top of the hour, and this is what Leela's talking about. This is an opportunity you can make comments to the CRTC about this process online. I'll give you the URL. It's fairly lengthy and unwieldy, so you are going to want to grab a pen or a pencil to write it down. I'll mention it again a little later in the show as well, and we podcast this show, of course, here on CHLY 101.7 FM in balmy Nanaimo, and we will put that link up on the podcast as well, so you can get it off of there. But I will tell you now that the link is www.crtc.gc.ca/eng/archive/2010/2010-928.htm. It's a bit of a mouthful. I will mention it again later in the show when you have a pen at the ready, and we will put it on the podcast as well.
And if I could just mention, on our website at cooperadio.org, if you just go on the front page, there's a little link with FAQs, information about the swap, and there's also a link to file interventions there. So if you just want to go straight through cooperadio.org, then you can get some background and also go straight to CRTC link.
Great. Thank you for that. That's a much easier link, really, isn't it?
A little bit easier to say on the air.
Absolutely. So, Leela, if you didn't pursue, or how does the board of directors feel that if you didn't pursue this deal, how long could CFRO run for?
I mean, who's to say, right, in reality? But things are not looking good. I mean, really, this issue of our transmission has come up at the past three AGMs. So, in essence, the board really was mandated to be dealing with the transmission of the station, because there were so many complaints about, you know, spottiness and people not receiving, you know, our signal in certain areas and that. So that was already on the table, and so that was an issue. Financially, it's always hard. It's always hard. As a staff person, I can attest to the fact that it is literally hand-to-mouth. It is very, very, very challenging. And, I mean, obviously, we've got the challenges of the building we're in as well that make it difficult. You know, we've got bed bugs in our building and rats and all sorts of lovely creatures. So we're not in the best place to start with. And the fact that we keep going, it really moves me. I think the fact that we keep going has to do with the fact that there are some incredibly devoted people who just have a passion for what they do every single week. And if it weren't for them, I don't think we would keep going, you know. So I mean, not to be too dreary, I think there's quite a lot of strength that the organization has, and we've been around for 35 years. But
there's a lot of history at CFRO.
There's a lot of history, you know, and we'll keep going, but it's a matter of how we keep going, I think. Are we going to keep going sort of struggling and just kind of trying to get by, or is it a matter of actually, you know, taking an extra step and trying to do all those things we want to do and have the kind of web presence that we want to have now and you know, do the kind of training programs that we want to really increase our profile and our quality.
Because it's true, I guess, that you could have looked to another direction. You could have looked at, for example, fundraising possibilities to try to bring money into the station instead of making a deal like this, or, you know, lowering the costs of the station, lowering the operating costs of the station, you know, or in conjunction, those kinds of things.
Well, I have to say that having been part of budget processes for 8 years, there's absolutely no way we could lower the budget of the station without, like, not having any staff anymore. That we're at bare minimum.
How many paid staff members do
we
you
have? We
have
4 part-time staff. Each of us is probably doing the 5 full-time jobs within our part-time hours.
Right, right. Yeah, it's a common reality at all community radio stations. It's very similar here at CHLY. We have 1 paid full-time staff member, and it's really incredible the quality and the devotion that happens in the station to keep the station running on a year after year basis. It's you know, really commendable to CHLY and all community radio stations.
It's really, and I think it's a real testament to what it is we offer. You know, I think that there's something so important to the human condition about what we do in community radio. There's something people need to do. They need to tell their stories. They need to have that outlet, and it's not sort of an extra thing that they need for life. It's really part of living, you know. I think that's how I view it, because I see people coming week after week, you know. There's deaths in their family. There's births in their family.
And they still keep coming.
You know,
yeah.
Through thick and thin for 25 years. We have programmers who have been around for 25 years. And this is how important this is to them.
So we were talking about the idea of lowering the cost of the stations or fundraising and that kind of thing. In the past, has CFRO received grants from various organizations?
Yep, absolutely.
Will this deal affect the ability for CFRO to apply and to successfully receive those kinds of grants?
I can't see how, and in fact, in some ways, it might, you know, improve our position, because we can actually offer some matching grants, because there are no grants now that I'm aware of that will pay for 100% of what you want to do. So
no, certainly not. That's, you know, unfortunately, we don't live in a political climate where that exists.
Yeah, so, you know, in some ways, it helps us in that way.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to, you know, time is moving on, and I certainly want to give time to both Ken and Jesse to have some comments. Just one final question for you. Leela, there's folks that they've suggested other avenues to work with in terms of lobbying simultaneously. So one concerned citizen suggested that one alternate route might be to lobby the CRTC to subsidize the transmitter lease costs for community stations. So that community stations, you know, you mentioned the fact that you had a dramatic shift from, you know, 5,000 to 36,000 as a cost in 1 year. Now, what do you think about that idea of lobbying the CRTC to subsidize those kind of transmitter lease costs for specifically community radio stations?
Well, I mean, I was part of the community radio policy review process that just occurred with the CRTC, and that was, you know, I think even though there's a lot farther to go, I think it was very successful in terms of the CRTC hearing what our sector needs, and that is money. You know, we need very concrete support to keep us going. So I think they heard that, and I think the mechanisms are starting to be, are in place, and we can start to use those mechanisms to really push to get more and more funding towards our sector. So whether that looks like transmitter rental space or just operating costs, right? Which I think is what we're starting to get. Then I think yes. That's a good thing. You know, I think it is important for the CRTC to understand that. And I think they do understand that. I think their recent decision really showed that. And I think it's up to us to keep pushing to try to increase the piece of the pie that we're getting there.
Great. What I'd like to do now is I'd like to shift gears. Thanks to Leela, and I would like to move over to Ken Zakreski. Ken, as I mentioned, I gave his bio off at the top, so I'm not going to read the whole thing again, but I will mention that he's been working as a developer to bring Gabriela Co-op Radio, proposed CKGI 98.7 FM, onto the air. Ken, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. So, Ken, you've heard this discussion. You already know about it. You're well-versed with the intricacies of it. What are your thoughts, concerns, comments?
Well, to start off, to say what a deal. co-op is looking at a huge windfall, a huge influx. It's going to take the administration, or the financial administration, pressure off the station so that they can focus on their programming a lot more without having that burden, that nagging burden of administration, which haunts us all in community radio. Another thing is revealed, Mr. Patterson is a sugar daddy. I think we'll have to call him that from now on. This is quite a sweet deal. Another thing to mention is that co-op radio in these circles means Vancouver co-op radio. They are the grand mom of the area. They are co-op radio. I mean, there is no doubt about it. Vancouver co-op radio is co-op radio in these circles. Even on Gabriola, it's referred to as that, and people know what you mean. Another issue that wasn't really mentioned, and I'm not quite positive on this, as I'm not a physical engineer. You would need to really get an engineering opinion on it. But Industry Canada in January 1st changed the rules for domestic protection. What that means is that a lot of stations, and I'm not pointing out to co-op here, but a lot of stations would have, say, a coverage area that they could broadcast to. And if it's not fully implemented, it's still protected. In the case of co-op, I don't know what their full protection is, but Jim Patterson will be taking advantage of that with the swap. So it may be a situation where co-op could lose the expanded area that they could broadcast to if they were broadcasting at a higher power.
So, Ken, I just want to draw you back, because for a layperson, that might be confusing. Can you explain that again?
Industry Canada handles the technical side of an applicant's license. In the case of CHLY, they have a protected area under their Class A license. So Class A, B, and C, C being the largest, license have many contours, and they indicate the protected area. It means you cannot interfere with the signal in that protected area. So the protected area may be bigger than the service area. Now, the service area is the area where you can actually hear the station.
Yes.
And in the case of co-op, it sounds like their protected area is larger than their service area.
Which I think is standard.
Which is standard in the sector in Canada. And as of January 1st, the changes in domestic protection came into effect under Industry Canada rules. So if you don't use it, you lose it. Which brings us to where Gabriola Radio found a channel. And the one thing to remember is there are no clear channels in the Pacific Coast. There is no place where you can put up a protected station in this area anyway, which doesn't interfere with other stations. So you really do need to work together as a broadcast community, both commercial, public, and community radio needs to work together in order to bring a new station on the air. It's very hard to find an open channel. So there are no open channels, there are no clear channels, so every channel has its bag of nails. And in the case of CKGI Gabriela Co-op Radio, we looked at the shadow of a giant. Rogers was broadcasting out of Victoria at 100,000 watts on CIOC, and because of intervening topography, which means big rocks in the way, their signal wasn't coming into the Gabriel area, so we applied to broadcast in the shadow of a giant.
Right.
And under the current rules, Rogers couldn't object, but back in the day, Rogers did object, and we were withdrawn because of Rogers' objection, because their area was protected. Now, we had shortlisted several channels at that time. This channel in the shadow of a giant was the one that we found that was the least expensive to implement and had the offer of being able to broadcast from Gabriola, which is one thing that our fire chief had decided would be a superior service to the community in event of an emergency. The fire department would be able to access the tower.
Because you're an island.
Because we're an island.
Yes.
You can't just run up to Mount Benson or another tower site to actually fix your transmitter after an earthquake. So we found a second channel. So when Rogers had objected to our use of 98.5, which under the rules they were permitted to do, we approached Patterson Group. There was another channel that's clear-ish that would require the permission of the Wave. And the Wave was operated by Patterson Group. Nobody owns the channels, as Leela said, but they operated that channel. So the channel we were looking at was third adjacent to the Wave. And how you get over third adjacent interference is to co-locate. Now, that's how CHLY is established. It's third adjacent as well to a Patterson station. And how that overcome was by co-locating. Both transmitters are coming out of the same antenna through a combiner. Now, we approached Pattison, funnily, just shortly before it sounds like they approached Co-op, with the indication that we were looking at this channel, mm-hmm. and would we have their permission to co-locate our tower, mm-hmm. or our antenna, on or our transmitter, on the site that they have for the wave. And they came back a week later saying they're going to pass.
Okay.
Now, we offered them the same terms under the agreement that they have with CHLY for use of the transmitter site.
And they passed on
that. And they passed on that. And we, you know, we were quite concerned at that time because the third option was basically not much better than tin can with a string. So luckily, Rogers was denied their application to expand their 100,000-watt CIOC service. So we really forgot about the second channel until Co-op was announced last week that they're going to go ahead and use that. So basically, there was an openish channel that would require Pattison to let an applicant co-locate at in the Nanaimo market that would be usable by a community group. It really isn't a commercially viable channel because it's just quite a small one, but very suited to a community group. Now, with the rule change, which we didn't know at the time, which I didn't understand until now, Co-op wouldn't have been able to object to, I don't think, if the engineering was done to fully protect them within their service contour, not their actual protected contour. So there basically would be an open channel that could be used locally.
How does the frequency swap change that?
The frequency swap changes that because Pattison is going to take over the channel that that Co-op is using and bump it up to 100,000-watt Class C license.
Okay.
So the clear channel in the Vancouver Island area will be toast.
Okay. So it basically, in essence, it may affect CKGI's backup plan.
That is our backup plan, and
yes.
If the swap goes through, we have no backup plan. And although we're not really sweating that, because although Rogers did reapply to expand their 98.5 100,000-watt service, they didn't meet the criteria that the CRTC had set out in their decision originally denying them.
Okay.
So we are quite confident we will obtain this signal, use of this signal from the CRTC, and be able to broadcast in the shadow of a giant.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. It's interesting. It may not affect you, but it adds another layer of complexity to the whole.
Well, there is a bigger
swap.
Issue here, and that is the use. My concern outside of the deal is the consolidation of channels in the Vancouver market, in the commercial sector as
yes.
well. In my, you know, it's not a perfect world, and chocolate doesn't flow in rivers, and money doesn't grow on trees. I realize that, but I would prefer to have a better co-op signal, which I think we're getting anyway. I haven't looked at what their power output would be. So I did think it would be nicer to have a community station broadcasting it at the higher power, not Pattison.
I would agree with that. I think probably most listeners would.
Well, most listeners of CHLY probably would agree.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I meant. We are on CHLY, therefore. Yeah, and I think that's a really valid point. I think this is the time now to bring in our third guest, Jesse Schroeder, because I know that's a concern of his as well. I just want to remind folks that Jesse Schroeder is a longtime media activist. He's also the current president of CHLY, this station, and he's speaking today as a concerned citizen. So, Jesse, welcome into the discussion. And just coming off of what Ken mentioned about the concern for greater commercial consolidation, I know that's one of your concerns as well.
Yes, thanks, Marion. And I'll just mention to folks, I am the president of CHLY, but I am going to be speaking today as a concerned citizen. And the reason why I got involved with CHLY was to avoid this exact situation that's occurring right now. CHLY's signal is actually of a commercial grade. It's 3,000 watts that we have the benefit of. And that reaches all the way up to Powell River and down to Mill Bay and Salt Spring Island, also down to northern Washington State. So we've been granted an exceptional piece of real estate on the spectrum. And what Ken was mentioning a little bit earlier, I'm not sure if you got all of that, but essentially it's a matter of protecting that real estate in this area because there is a lot of physical limitations, mountainous regions, and the ability to place transmitters and to get signals across not just the FM frequency, but all frequencies have resonant effects. And so even the airplanes and the military frequencies need to be taken into account when you're setting up these transmitter sites. And so, you know, I certainly, you know, media consolidation is in this In this country, and specifically in the Vancouver market, it is amongst the highest of all G20 nations. We have a very highly consolidated media market, and it's essentially the radio stations such as Co-op Radio and CHLY and some small independent newspapers and people that are basically just working from the grassroots that represent the diversity in that market. And so, you know, it was mentioned earlier that essentially Pattison is a latecomer to this, to the radio market. And that may be, but, you know, there's certainly some pretty heavy players already in the market, Chorus being one of them. And so I'm not really, at this point in time, thinking that this move to give the Pattison Group another, I believe it's 45,000 watts is actually what it's licensed for. I know that Leela didn't have that paperwork in front of her, but that's my understanding, is that it's a 45,000 watt signal, which once broadcast can have an effective radius or an effective broadcast, an effective transmission of 100,000 watts. Now, she also didn't seem to have her paperwork on what the 100.5 signal offers, and I believe that that's 2,700 watts. So as it stands, my understanding is that Co-op Radio is using 5,500 watts, and they're going to be going to 2,700 watts as a result of this. And so we really have to look at the spectrum as real estate. Like Ken mentioned, there's only a limited amount of possibilities for a new radio station to come online, and it's very difficult. And Leela mentioned that, in fact, that it's quite sought after, that the Pattison Group's wants what they have. Now, she's very clear that, of course, nobody owns these signals, and I really have to agree with her. These signals belong to the public. Either they belong to the Queen or they belong to the public. But if we believe that they belong to the public, then what we have is a situation where essentially licenses have been given out to develop areas of public property. And in amongst all of this, you have essentially a dominant number of large commercial players who dominate the real estate. And these areas of the spectrum on which community radio stations exist, I consider to be the parkland of this real estate. And these are parks. And they're set aside for the public to use. They're set aside for the public to access. And they're set aside for the public to voice their concerns. And when we have, 45,000 watts. She mentioned it earlier. Once you give that up, you never get that back. It's gone. And so getting in line, getting in the queue is a very important thing. And Co-op Radio is in the queue. They're so far ahead on the queue that they ended up with a beautiful piece of real estate. And that's a beautiful park that they've got there.
So in your view, the value of the real estate is worth a lot more than, for example, what Co-op Radio is getting for it.
Well, you can't put a price tag on it because they're not making any more of this stuff. And it's sort of like waterfront, right? So once you have a piece of waterfront, that's it. You know, and if there's old growth forest on it and you log it, that's it. It's gone.
So you're coming from a, I guess, more of a political perspective where you would say that this, it should be protected at all costs, that co-op should hang on to this frequency at all costs.
Well, essentially what you have is a group has been given the ability to manage this park. And this park, perhaps you've got 45 acres in this park and you've only managed to put trails on 5 acres of it. And so along comes a developer and he says, boy, you know, there's 45 acres here. You guys are only using 5. Like, geez, why don't I come in and I'll set up a big, huge commercial enterprise on the 45 acres? Well, I'm sorry, that just doesn't roll with me.
They were going to lose it if they didn't use it.
Well, you know, I'll tell you something about that, Ken. And I'm going to speak now maybe for just a brief second as the president of CHLY. But we just sent in our application to increase our protected range. Essentially, January 11th was the deadline that we were notified of in order to do that. And you have two different directions here. One direction is you can either look at changing your model so that you can broadcast at 45,000 watts. And it sounds like for 3 years in a row, the membership has been demanding this, that they do actually put their efforts into, you know, increasing their transmission by replacing their transmitter, if nothing else. But if you're going to replace your transmitter, why not get a stereo transmitter at 45,000 watts?
So what you're saying is you would have supported co-op going in another direction and finding money, not through a frequency swap, but through fundraising or lowering operating costs or that kind of thing?
Yeah, and this is where, you know, it's going to, and I'm going to have to ask the listeners to bear with me here.
And I'll just mention, Jesse, that we are rapidly running out of time. We have approximately 2 minutes. So
I will.
Just to keep that in mind.
Okay, I'm essentially going to be fairly critical of Leela and the management group at CFRO.
Of the deal, not of Leela personally.
Of the approach to this particular problem, because essentially you, I have worked for 3 years here, and it is always a struggle. And the assets that we have are the people power, and so when you've been given the responsibility to manage this organization, it is your responsibility to essentially ensure that you do have a transmitter. We're about to purchase our new transmitter, and I'm sorry that they haven't managed to make the moves to do that themselves. But there are many other options, and I'm not happy with the transparency level on this. We've got, this happened over Christmas, and I don't think that anybody has been given an adequate time to fully examine the deal. I understand that non-disclosure agreements can be assigned, but that was your choice to sign them, and you didn't have to necessarily do so. And my belief is that it really does need to be slowed down on this. So please do get on the CRTC website and make comment.
Folks, thank you so much. The address will be on the podcast. This is, as you can tell, a very contentious issue. I give great thanks to Leela Chinia, Ken Zakreski, and Jesse Schroeder for joining us in the studio today to start to contextualize this. Thanks so much. This has been Be The Media. I'm Marian van der Zon with Neil Scobie on CHLY 101.7 FM. Be The Media is brought to you by the Media Studies Department and the Media Research Lab at BIU.
How does that grab you?